This holiday season, give the gift of reliable news and beautiful music. A year-end contribution to WSHU helps us inform, entertain, and connect our community throughout the year. Your support makes all the difference. Please donate by December 31st. Give at WSHU.org, and thank you.
This is WSHU's After All Things with daily news and culture from around Long Island Sound. Offshore wind projects in our region have been suspended by the Trump administration. The flu is ripping through Long Island right now. Governor Hochul signs a bill eliminating the so-called 100-foot rule, plus an effort in Connecticut to keep foster kids with family. Those stories and more are coming up. I'm Sabrina Garone. The Trump administration is suspending construction on Vineyard Wind, Empire Wind, and three other offshore wind projects along the East Coast. As the New England News Collaborative's Barbara Moran reports, the administration says it's stopping the projects due to national security concerns.
The Department of the Interior says that the turbine blades and reflective towers of offshore wind farms could create radar interference. But Kate Sinding Daly with the Conservation Law Foundation says that the projects already had a national security review under the Biden administration.
It's ironic at best that they're citing national security when science tells us that climate change itself presents one of the greatest risks to national security. And of course, offshore wind is a crucial component to addressing climate change, particularly in New England.
The pause is effective immediately and affects projects under construction in Massachusetts, Rhode Island, Connecticut, New York, and Virginia. For the New England News Collaborative, I'm Barbara Moran.
Tis the season for colds and flu cases. WSHU's Desiree DiOrio reports Long Islanders are getting hit especially hard this winter.
All three of the major respiratory illnesses are increasing faster than this time last year. That's according to data from the New York State Health Department. COVID is up about 15%, the flu 30%, and RSV is up 35%. Dr. Bruce Farber is with Northwell Health. He says those increases mean more hospitalizations, and that's why he encourages getting a flu shot.
We do have a new case strain this year. It's not a perfect match for the vaccine. The flu vaccine is not the best vaccine that we have. However, it is our vaccine, and it is very good at preventing hospitalizations and deaths.
Fewer than one in four New Yorkers have received a flu shot this year. Desiree DiOrio, WSHU News.
New London's Coast Guard Museum now has all the money it needs to open in 2027, thanks to the federal government. WSHU's Davis Donovan reports.
There's nearly $50 million for the planned museum in the $900 billion defense bill signed by President Trump. That'll let museum builders finish work by next year. U.S. Senator Chris Murphy of Connecticut, who backed the project, says it faced unforeseen obstacles in its development. The Coast Guard is the only branch of the armed forces without its own museum, and New London has been home to the Coast Guard Academy since 1910. Planners say it'll include 38,000 square feet of museum space, and the USS Eagle, one of the Coast Guard's only two commissioned tall ships, will dock there when it's not in service. Davis Donovan, WSHU News.
When kids can't stay home, Connecticut wants them closer to it by keeping care in the family. A conversation on that is coming up. Local support for After All Things comes from Hartford Healthcare. For the second time, all hospitals received A ratings from the Leapfrog Group, the nation's leading independent hospital monitor. This means that patients have access to the safest level of care, no matter which hospital they choose. A Huntington-based toy charity says someone stole more than 400 toys from its warehouse. Toys for Hope says the toys were meant for their holiday drive. They say they've since gotten a lot of donations from people to make up for it. New York State now requires social media sites to show minors who use them a warning label. They're required to tell minors that social media is addictive and causes a variety of mental health issues, from depression to lack of sleep. A Bridgeport City Councilwoman is suing over a voter-approved update to the city's charter. Maria Pereira says the revision is illegal. Among other things, it would strengthen ethics oversight and make city clerks a non-elected position. Governor Hochul has signed legislation that eliminates the so-called 100-foot rule in New York. It required that utilities install new gas lines for free to hook up customers who live within 100 feet of an existing gas main. But customers and not the utility shouldered that cost. Advocates like Jessica Azule with the Alliance for a Green Economy are applauding the governor.
Repealing the 100-foot rule will stop utilities from spending nearly $600 million on gas pipelines and passing that cost on to us.
But in a letter to Hochul, the state Senate Republican conference said shifting those hookup costs to customers will place an undue burden on homeowners, builders, and renters. Connecticut's Department of Children and Families is trying to increase the number of foster children being placed with family members. WSHU's Ebong Udama spoke with the Connecticut Mirror's Laura Tillman to discuss her in-depth reporting on this. Their conversation is part of the collaborative podcast, Long Story Short.
You wanted to know why kinship placements are critical in helping Connecticut's DCF accomplish its mission to children and families. What did you find? And let's start with your profile of Victoria Woody.
Yeah, so Victoria Woody was a mom of a 9-year-old, and she got a call while she was at work one Thursday in March of 2024 and found out that DCF was asking her to take in her 5 nieces and nephews, her sister's kids, and that they actually wanted to bring them to her home that very day.
All 5 of them at the same time?
Yeah, including a set of 9-month-old twins.
Wow.
So it's quite an ask for her. And it's the kind of situation that's typical of what's called a kinship placement, where DCF is trying to put more of the kids that it places with either family members or what are called fictive kin, which can be like a teacher from school or a neighbor that the kid knows very well, someone who's kind of a very close connection in their life. So basically, this is a part of a national effort that's being made in many states that acknowledges a growing body of research that says that kids who go with kin tend to have better outcomes in many areas. So I was interested in learning more about this. I had taken a class at Poynter, which is a journalism institute on child welfare reporting, and kinship care and the move toward kinship care was kind of a big emphasis of that class as well.
Now, but there's some pushback from people who have volunteered as foster parents. You talked to a few of them who seem to be a bit skeptical that kinship care is always the way to go.
I think there's always tensions. People have, you know, a lot of different experiences with the foster care and child welfare system. And so depending on what they've seen in their particular situations, I think that it can raise, you know, red flags. I don't want to sort of overemphasize the skepticism. I think that in general, the advocacy community and the research community and the child welfare community all acknowledge that sort of in general, kinship care has better outcomes. But of course, like when you're talking about a child, you're talking about a unique situation. And so for every kid, even if the preponderance of data says kinship is better, there's always the chance that in a specific situation, you know, could there be problems with the kin that they're placed with? Could there be, I think one of the trends that people remark upon is just the idea that, you know, kin are not always prepared to take in a kid, where like Victoria Woody, you know, she had a son and she had a good job and she had sort of a stable lifestyle to be able to take this on. But sometimes DCF is asking an aunt or an uncle at this emergency moment to take in kin, and they might not have all the puzzle pieces together to be able to support a kid who maybe is going through a really traumatic experience of removal from their parents. So it's tricky.
Let's talk a little bit more about Victoria, because even though she was pretty well off in being able to take the kids in, she still needed quite a bit of help from DCF to be able to make it work, right?
Yeah, of course. I mean, imagine taking in kids, one of whom had type 1 diabetes, the toddler had trouble sleeping at night, and suddenly you're taking all these kids into your home. You don't have the right furniture, you don't have the right bedding, you don't have the right formula, all of these things that she needed. And DCF, as well as some family and friends, were able to help her with that.
Okay, now Connecticut had set a goal of 70% back in 2019, getting at least up to 70% placement in kinship care. How has that worked out?
You know, they're moving toward that goal. They've gone, I believe, 10% improvement since that time. So they were around, nearly 40% when that goal was set. Now they're at nearly 50%. But there was no deadline set for that goal. And I think that the COVID pandemic also really complicated life and kind of any family's ability to take in a child at the last moment in this way. So they're working on it. I mean, one of the things that was kind of striking to me was when I went to advocates and others nationally to ask them about how Connecticut's doing. In general, they were pretty impressed that Connecticut's at almost 50%. It's not a insignificant figure to have gotten to. So they're still working on that 70% number, but that would be kind of like a aspirational number for them to get to. So they have faced some challenges getting there.
Now, neighboring Rhode Island has done much better. Could you just tell us why that is so?
Yeah, I mean, Rhode Island has 73%. I didn't dig too deep into the why, but I do think that anyone who lives in Connecticut probably has a sense that Rhode Island is a bit of a different animal than Connecticut. It's our neighbor, but at the same time, it's a much smaller state. It's a state with just sort of a different economic makeup. So there's just different dynamics likely happening there.
Yeah. Thank you so much, Laura. Really appreciate this.
Thank you.
Laura Tillman is the Connecticut Mirror's Human Services reporter. Long Story Short comes from WSHU Public Radio and the Connecticut Mirror. Subscribe to the podcast to hear more from Laura about why Connecticut DCF's push for more kinship placements is critical for the agency and for families. Available wherever you get your podcasts, I'm Ebong Udama.
For the latest news from around Long Island Sound, listen on the radio at WSHU.org or with the free WSHU app. After All Things is supported by Hartford HealthCare. I'm Sabrina Garone. No podcast for the rest of the week, but I'll be back with you on Monday, December 29th. From all of us here at WSHU, wishing you a very Merry Christmas.